Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. A writer from Canada, so typical, Jan McNabb, posed the hypothetical question, what if Mueller actually kind of sucks at his job? Which is not something I had heard raised, but he kind of built a disturbingly convincing case that might be...
Built a case that at least made us scratch our heads a little
right.
bit.
So, like, Mueller, the thing you always hear is that he was the head of the FBI for a number of years in a row, I think his full term, and then Obama, like, kept him on for a couple years because he was so good at his job. And so, you know, that sounds like, oh, man, this guy's got his shit together. He's probably going to be like Mr. Ace Detective, like the Dark Knight of the modern world. And there are a couple investigations in his background that he headed up that have been totally like bungled. So there's a case in the late 70s where he headed up an investigation into the Hell's Angels, who were openly like selling drugs and racketeering and just gang assaulting people. And so he led a team of four prosecutors to retry these guys, 11 of them. And after 4 months, the jury was like, we're deadlocked. And the judge declared a mistrial. And Mueller was like, yeah, no further questions. I'm not going to seek a retrial, which, and this was a case that people thought should have been fairly easy-ish to make. But that was a long time ago.
And his defense, too, they were saying that, like, at the time, these racketeering charges he came up with were, like, sort of novel back then.
Okay.
Like, a very different way of going after these kind of groups.
And then the other big case that he was in charge of was figuring out what the fuck was going on in the aftermath of 9/11 with the anthrax attacks that killed 5 people, sent 17 others to the hospital. the FBI was in charge of finding out who it was. And there were only a set group of people with access to this, like, weapons-grade, government-grade anthrax. And they originally accused a guy named Stephen J. Hatfill, who was a virologist at the Army's laboratories at Fort Detrick in Maryland. But that got out to the media, and he ended up suing the FBI for $5.8 million because it wasn't him. And like the type of anthrax that he had access to was not the type of anthrax that was used in the attacks. And then, so the story that I had always heard is that they then found the guy who definitely did it, this guy Bruce E. Ivins, who, when he learned from his lawyer that he was about to be accused of murder in connection with these anthrax attacks, committed suicide. And there are still reasons to think that he might have been the guilty party. Namely, he found out from his lawyer that he was being accused, and rather than being like, damn it, I'm innocent, killed himself. So that's crazy. But on the other hand, there are a lot of sort of second guessing going on about whether he was actually guilty. They say that, you know, some of the evidence where they're suggesting that the types of anthrax matched up might just be a case of parallel evolution, basically because anthrax is like a living organism. They were able to match the anthrax he had access to the anthrax in the envelopes, but they were saying, no, you could easily have two batches of anthrax that just evolved in similar directions, essentially. So we don't really know. There's just been accusations that Mueller and the FBI didn't rigorously enough explore that explanation. Yeah. And then there was supposedly a FBI campaign to paint him as the guilty party after he died. So to like really just make it an open and shut thing, which obviously would be very convenient for them.
Right.
Like, oh, well, this guy can't protect himself anymore, so let's just, you know,
bury it on this guy,
bury him, so to speak.
It's tough to like hear that, like, he kind of fucked up in the past. But again, we don't know. These could be the kinds of mistakes the superhero has to go through, kinds of failures that are like, you know what? I'm not fucking up this time. This is a time to get it right.
Right. So
we'll see.
We shall see. It's just a thing that I had totally blindsided me because I had only heard that he was like this superhero FBI leader.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, I was hoping an article would be like, he had a dream about these serial killers and he found them the next day and prevented a mass murder.
Like, right. Exactly.
But again, it's like, I didn't know how to prosecute the Hell's Angels. You're like, oh, shit.
So we wanted to talk about this big Veritas sting. So this dude, James O'Keefe, who is not really a journalist. He's more like, he is to journalism what those YouTube prank videos are to
comedy.
Journalism, I guess. he's just like a YouTube prank video guy, essentially.
Or like what Viners are to comedy.
Right.
Like actual comedy.
Right. Yeah, that would have been a better.
It's a version.
My analogy was not well constructed.
Hey, but that was off top, man, and I've been thinking about it.
And I respect it.
What happened? Miles, you were telling us about this attempted sting like 2 weeks ago.
Yo, okay, yes. So this guy, James O'Keefe, he has this organization called Project Veritas, where their whole thing is to infiltrate liberal groups, media groups, nonprofit organizations, and try and like do undercover video shit.
Like that Planned Parenthood shit?
Yeah. And then selectively edit it so to make the organization or entity look as terrible as possible. And he's never actually dug up real shit. He's always just found sound bites he's able to piece together to then be like, oh, look at the New York Times. They're in line with James Comey, which is a whole other story I can get into later because a personal friend of mine was caught up in one of James O'Keefe's stings. But anyway,
sounds like this is a personal thing to me.
Eh? Yeah, maybe
sounds
it
like
is.
You're using
guys,
this.
Buckle your fucking seatbelts, man, because I'm about to air this dude out. So he basically, the Washington Post broke the most damning Roy Moore stories about his, you know, alleged pedophilia and sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, like, we've seen things come out that people have been trying to discredit the Washington Post. Like, there was someone on Twitter who was like, my wife was approached and offered $1,000 to make a false accusation against Roy Moore. And then we covered this a couple weeks ago. There was that really bizarre robocall that went into Alabama with like the most offensive version of a Jewish guy named Bernie Bernstein.
This is Bernie Bernstein
from the Washington Post, and I'll give you monies if you lie about Roy Moore. And I'm even doing a better version because this guy who was acting couldn't even do like a real New York accent.
Right. Also, they came with the name Bernie Bernstein. Yeah. Come on, niggas, fucking try. Yeah, that is so wild.
So next level. So this is like, so we don't know if those
are Jewy Jewerstein and
exactly. Right. Exactly.
That is like, they do not put a lot of thought into fake names, as we will find out.
Oh, yeah. It's like, my name's Andy Hanukkah. Like, you know, it's like, what the fuck? Like, okay, sure.
Right.
So.
We don't know these things are connected.
Yeah, but we do know that there is a push clearly to discredit the Washington Post and make Roy Moore look better.
Right.
So the latest fuckery from Project Veritas was he basically sent in a woman to lie about the fact that she had hooked up with Roy Moore in the early 90s as a teenager, and they were having a sexual relationship, and he made her get an abortion.
Right.
And so she wanted to come out and break that story with the Washington Post. Right. And that's like the false pretense that this woman who works with Project Veritas under James O'Keefe was sent to do. And her, you know, her whole story was like, you know, obviously, if true, like, would have been a bombshell other thing. But she kind of like rubbed the Washington Post people the wrong way because like she was really adamant every time she talked to me. She's like, well, you guys will do everything. This will end Roy Moore, right? Like, I want him out of the race. And
she's
being very transparent.
Like, it's like so clear.
Essentially
that was
what James O'Keefe thinks the Washington Post would be into.
How they think. Right. Like, I think he was hoping she would say something like, this will, you know, this will end him, right? And I think the sexiest soundbite he was hoping for was like, yes, because it is our mission as a Washington Post to smear Roy Moore in any way, even if it is a dubious accusation.
Right.
Or whatever. So, but push comes to shove, he doesn't realize that the Washington Post are actual fucking journalists.
Right.
So they
don't. They don't know what actual journalism is, so they just aren't prepared for this.
Because they think
like,
it's
fact checking.
They think it's easy as going, hey, a fake robocall, Bernie Bernstein. And again, not that they're connected, but the thought, the logic being applied by people trying to discredit the Washington Post is like, it's that easy. Like, just tell them. And so it's very dangerous because, A, in doing so, you're also trying to invalidate credible victims of sexual assault, which is, like, are on its surface completely fucked up and deranged anyway.
Right.
But also, this guy, he is the worst at actually digging any kind of real story up. Like, he has a pattern of failure, which we'll get into later. So cut to this Washington Post journalist. She meets with this woman who calls herself Jamie Phillips, who is the accuser. But what this woman doesn't realize is that this woman, this other journalist from the Post, she came with fucking receipts.
Right.
Like, she didn't just go to be like, yeah, let's hear more about your story. They're like, hold up. Like, in the process of talking to this woman, they're like, hold on. We found some stuff. We found a GoFundMe page where she was like, hey, I need money to go to New York so I can work for the Daily Caller as like a investigative journalist to bring down the liberal mainstream media.
Right.
That's literally on her GoFundMe page with her name on it.
Right.
Damn.
So they're like, okay, this is already weird. They looked into her, like, where she said she worked and these other things, and nothing added up. So basically, the Washington Post, they decided to turn the tables and they're like, you know what? Let's set up some cameras.
Let's
like
roast
wear
this
a
lady.
Mic. Yeah, because this is what James O'Keefe and Project Veritas does to other like news outlets. So they're like, you know what? Let's turn the tables up. So we're about to play the clip, which is like this whole interaction with the Washington Post and this mole, Jamie Phillips, really comes to a head. And this is right off the heels of the Washington Post reporter sliding a screen grab of the GoFundMe page and being like, so you want to work for conservative undercover gotcha journalism? She's like, no. And she's like, well, who did you interview with over there? And she begins to try and explain who she's interviewing with. And she comes up with a very generic name.
Right.
So let's check
this out. And this is taking place in a public restaurant, which is why it's so loud. Like, the woman was like, I want to meet you, the person who originally reported on Roy Moore, in a public restaurant. And the Washington Post shows up having actually fact-checked her background.
Okay. And so who was the person that you interviewed with?
It was a lady named Kathy.
What was her last name?
Johnson.
Kathy Johnson?
Uh-huh. Kathy Johnson.
And where was it?
In the New York area.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, like, why we are going into all this yet.
Well,
I haven't even agreed to go through with the story yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, since you contacted us, you reached out to us, you know, we, you know, went ahead and did some background checking, you know what I mean, on some of the things that you had told Beth about your story. And so this came up, and so I just want to understand what that's about and why you would want to work for the Daily Caller. And I'm also, you know, frankly want to know if you're who you might be working for now.
I still do mortgage work.
Well, it's a little bit of an issue there, and you know, I just want to ask you to explain it, because when we called the company that you said that you worked for, they said they didn't have, that you didn't work there. So if you're not working for that mortgage company, where are you working? You said
branch. A branch, yeah.
Called a branch.
Maverick.
Yeah.
And
where is that?
It was out of Atlanta.
It was out of Atlanta? So did your, do you still have an interest in, as this says, combating the lies and deceit of the liberal MSM? Do you still have an interest in working in the conservative media movement to combat the lies and deceit of the liberal MSM? Is that still your interest?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Not at this point.
No.
Not at this point.
Catherine.
Uh-huh. What's her last name?
Johnson.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It's just funny, too, as it goes on. The woman who's trying to push the fake story then goes like, you know, can we just cancel this? Like, the heat's getting too hot. It's like, this is not a Columbia House get 12 CDs for a penny type agreement here. We're like, hey, can I cancel this? It's like, you open Pandora's box, m'lady.
Right. I mean, they're putting resources into, like, you know, your story, checking your story. Yeah. So it's not your right to be like, never mind, cancel.
Right. Which is odd, because in his most desperate attempts to show that the Washington Post is like a half-assed journalistic operation where they'll take hearsay and publish it, he basically just proved that they're on their shit, and there's no way that you could come in there like and not be completely fact-checked and verify that like what they're going to print has some kind of validity to
it. They're a news organization.
Yeah, right. They're not a guy with a YouTube channel.
I think if he had just put that lady, what was her name, Jamie Phillips, mm-hmm. through just like one acting class, like just anything, like maybe just a stand-up class, she could have came in there with so much more confidence, because you could hear it in her voice that she had never spoken out loud.
Like, you know, like, internet like yeah. Email lying. Yeah,
right.
She was like, yes. Uh-huh. Like, it was so quiet and gentle. It was like, she was not ready to be on camera.
She needs that
level
one improv.
She was just
improv.
Ready to come in there and like just give her like lies, and then when the woman came at her with when the actual journalist asked her details about her story,
the woman that you were hearing, that's Stephanie McCrumman, who also helped work on the Roy Moore piece. So I mean, shout out to Stephanie McCrumman too, because she, if you watch the video, she is so mad. She's like, "You are wasting my time,"
right. Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm so glad I'm looking at you, because
in your face,
yeah. And it the ending, it just like she just like storms off by the end.
It definitely has the tone of the Brendan Dassey interview from Making a Murderer, where like the cops are interviewing Brendan Dassey, and he's like, I don't know.
And the cops are just like so excited to just like,
right,
please just say that he just like grabbed her by the neck and killed her. And he's like, right. And he's like, yeah.
And this is like, so you are trying to work with the conservative media movement to bring down the liberal mainstream media? I don't know.
Can I go home and watch WrestleMania?
Yeah, exactly. This is the equivalent of what she was trying to do.
But this is like a video will come out of this that will be carefully edited by James O'Keefe to make it seem like they actually caught the Washington Post doing something, I'm sure, and it'll go viral.
He tried
on Drudge.
Yeah, he tried to fundraise off this yesterday, I think. He sent a letter out saying, "Oh, I was ambushed by Washington Post reporters because they like one of our operatives' cover was blown." He's like, "But it's fine because we got our story on them coming soon,"
right?
Which will probably be a pretty big nothing
black
burger.
All right, we're gonna go to a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
And we're back. We also just wanted to brag on ourselves a little bit. The Matt Lauer thing, one of our listeners pointed out to us on social media that we had called the Matt Lauer thing a little while ago. We got a clip of that.
Yeah, so we should let people know. This is from October 23rd.
Yes.
Of the 1023 episode.
And this is validating our thesis that if you pay attention to the tabloids, we do a weekly segment called the Bloid Watch.
Bloid Watch.
Where we look at tabloids because the tabloids have caught shit earlier than the mainstream media. And so that's what we were discussing. We had super producer Anna Hosnier on, and we were talking about what's going down in the Bloids.
I found a lot of stuff. One, apparently Megyn Kelly and Matt Lauer are in a feud, and one of them is getting fired. Now, if I were to put my money on it, I would probably say Megyn
Kelly.
Lauer.
Yeah. Wait,
Do you think they would really fire Matt Lauer or Megyn Kelly? Matt Lauer has had a very problematic career. And it's taking on strong.
Ooh, is he the next one?
I don't know.
Is he the next to...
Next domino to fall? God damn!
You've been geisted, wow. Lauer.
Geisted, wow. Motherfucker.
I mean, now there's two respected institutions that trust the tabloids. Daily Zeitgeist and the Men in Black.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where we come from.
I trust both of them. I just saw Men in Black 3 over the weekend.
It's the amazing. MIB.
That's one of my original underrated. Men in Black 3. Ties it together perfect.
This one's eating my popcorn.
That's a deep cut for y'all.
We do want to check in with the world, Trump, because it's been a while. I don't think we've even talked about Trump this week. It's been a while. So Trump has had a sort of eventful morning, just tweeting all sorts of stuff. He responded to the Lauer allegations by, you know, mentioning them and then saying that the guy who fired him has like skeletons in his closet, and then pivoting from that to accuse Joe Scarborough of murdering his intern, which is just a wild swing.
He is insane.
He is also retweeting videos by a right-wing extremist leader of the Britain First group, which is like an offshoot of the British National Party. But they're, yeah, they're extremists, and they're tweeting.
They're not extremists. They're straight up racist, white supremacist, fascists who only believe white people should be living in the UK or Britain specifically, as they like to say.
Right. So they've tweeted a bunch of videos, one of like a Muslim dude like breaking a statue of the Virgin Mary, one of an ISIS attack that killed a teenager, and another that they called a Islamic immigrant attacks a Dutch kid who's on crutches, which it turns out is actually just a Dutch kid with brown hair attacking a Dutch kid with blonde hair. And they're like, he's an immigrant. Yeah, look at
those
dark
immigrants.
Hair. But so there's this article that I read a couple days ago that I can't get out of my head that it's called The Nationalist Delusion. It's in The Atlantic, and I highly recommend people give it a look. But basically, it puts the lie to the idea that people who support Trump are supporting anything other than racism, or the idea that his election was about anything other than racism. Because I think the narrative that I had heard in the aftermath of the election was that it was downtrodden white people who had been like forgotten in the middle of the country.
Right.
And, you know, there's a study that came out that like deaths caused by despair, so like alcoholism, suicide, drug overdoses, were shooting up with this demographic of people, and people were equating that with the election of Trump. And this article points out that actually, when you look at voters who made less than $50,000 just overall, Clinton won by a proportion of 53% to 41%. So Clinton actually destroyed Trump when it came to the people in like
lower income brackets.
Yeah, lower income brackets. And Trump beat Clinton by 1% among people who made more than $50,000. So the most economically vulnerable Americans voted for Clinton overwhelmingly, which is pretty much the opposite of how it was portrayed in the aftermath of the election. But then if you just look at white people, so for white people who made less than $30,000, Trump won 57% to 34%, which is kind of what you had heard. For white people who made between $30,000 and $50,000, he won 56 to 37%. Between $50,000 and $100,000, he won 61% to 33%. So that's like upper middle class.
Right.
He won by the highest margin. And then $100,000 to $200,000, he won 56% to 39%. So it's like, it's all the same. It's not just lower income white people who voted for him. It's just all white people voted for Trump. And it's just pure racism. It's
right.
It's not the economic story that we've all been telling ourselves.
Well, right. And I think that economic story has been pushed so much because I think it's hard for many people, especially coming out of a post-Obama era, that the country could actually be that racist. Or there are people who are voting who really think like this, and that's how they're voting. Because I think it's easier for people to be like, oh, well, you know, she ignored the Rust Belt and these other things, and that's why it didn't work. And it purely this like, and as many people have been saying anyway, before even this data came out, was that this was like sort of backlash because Obama was president for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the racist white people felt humiliated by the existence of Obama. That's
right.
Where like the birther thing came from is like, you know, well, we can't have him actually have won the presidency legitimately. So they like made up this crazy conspiracy theory. And, you know, Trump jumped on that because he, as a racist dude, understood like how racist people felt, and he was like that. So like it's just like putting a lot of things into place for me, like in hindsight, like the birther thing just seemed crazy to me from the start, and so Trump being associated with it just seemed like, well, that's an arbitrary celebrity being associated with a arbitrary, like, crazy conspiracy theory. It might as well have been, like, that we didn't land on the moon or, you know, shit like
right.
that.
Yeah.
But it actually, like, all fits into this broad framework of, like, how racist white people felt about Obama being elected president. And, you know, that is primarily what Trump's election has been about. And so it also, like, when he does these things, like retweet racist, you know, extremist, right-wing, you know, white supremacist accounts, like, I think my reaction had been like, okay, well, like, surely this now, you know, like, even in spite of this, they're still following him. And it's like, no, it's because of this that right. people yeah. are still following
him. Oh, yeah. And I was thinking about this last night because I was on Reddit, and I don't know, for some reason I went down a Reddit rabbit hole, and there was one of these, like, you know, AMAs for this, like, nude model, and she
for some reason.
Okay, go on.
But one of the questions was like, it was like a very old AMA, and it was like, what do you think of this Trump guy running for president? And she was like, I like him because, you know, he just says it like it is. And I remember hearing that a lot. Like, I remember hearing that, and I really, like, started thinking about, like, that idea of someone who says it like it is. Who was like, you voted for someone who doesn't have restraint. Like, that was what you right. liked about him, is that the fact that they didn't think, oh, there's a time and a place, let's not, you know, say this, or let me say this in a way that's digestible. You like him because he is just an asshole all the time. And it I don't know, it just says a lot about the people who still support him. It's like, oh, you think it's like, you are one of those, like, anti-PC people, and you think America's too PC. And 9 times out of 10, it's because you're a white person who doesn't have, like, a frame of reference of, like, something being hurtful to you. Like, the most hurtful thing to you now is being racist, and you think it's just a made-up claim, you know? Like,
right.
Like, that's the thing, is, like, you can't even legitimately call anyone racist, because they're just looking at it as, like, oh, you're just calling me racist. It's like, no, I'm saying you're racist, and you should stop. Like,
right.
Like, that's your option, is stopping.
Yeah, and I think you can tell, too, that his, like you said, these tweets and, like, the way he comes after people of color, like, we can rattle off all the people of color that he's come at for being yeah. critical of him. And, like, it seems like if you're a white person, you have to also be powerful for him to come into his crosshairs, where people like even LeVar Ball
yeah.
get your attention. And when you look even at his tweets, right, where he's coming after LeVar Ball, the likes, not even like the retweets, the likes on those tweets where he's coming after the NFL or the people of color, obviously, like,
right.
the NFL is a, you know, you could switch that for black people.
And they're not even being critical of him, by the way. They're just not being, like, deferential and, like, what he considers, like, respectful
right.
and,
but,
like, you know.
But these tweets that are put these people in the crosshairs, they get more likes than most of his other tweets. When it's just stuff about, like, oh, I did a great thing at Mar-a-Lago, it's like, okay, it's around a certain amount of thousands of likes. But then it's like, LeVar Ball needs to be grateful, blah, blah, blah. Oh, everybody's liking that shit.
Right.
Yeah. And that should really show you, like, it's one thing, a lot of people will retweet the shit that he does because it's so crazy.
Yeah.
But the likes really tell you that people who are engaging with it, that's how they're engaging with it. Like, yes, I like, please tell this person of color or this
yeah.
organization, like, to back down or sit down or whatever.
Well, I've always looked at it as, like, you know, white people have a sense of, like, ownership of your success, where it's like, you shouldn't make me feel lesser than you if you have more money than me, because, you know, because I'm somehow allowing you to
right.
do this. Like, you should be respectful. It's like, why do I have to be respectful to this racist in Kentucky? Like, what reason do I have to be modest for you? Like, why
right.
should I not speak my mind? What have you done for me?
Kumail Nanjiani, like, tweeted something about that, too. It was, like, just something that really rubbed him the wrong way, was this idea that many people need to be grateful for their success
yeah.
or that they were somehow allowed to be
yeah.
like, to experience success.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that's just a thing that,
like
you
never,
wrestle with.
Like, I was thinking about it because I never, it's so funny, and a weird thing, not until Kaepernick started kind of coming out, I never considered him being a black guy and the dynamic that is, where it's like, quarterbacks are typically white. And quarterback is, like, your safest position. You have less likely to have CTE because you're not taking as many hits. And then I kind of finally realized that Kaepernick was one of the few black quarterbacks, I had to wonder, I was like, if Kaepernick was Kaepernick, but he was any other position, would he have gotten that much flack? Or is it even more, is it even more heavy that no one, people already have an excuse to keep another black person out the quarterback position?
And, oh yeah, we talk about that a lot here.
Yeah, that specific theory, because I mean, the black quarterback is a much like more controversial and like despised figure in American culture than people realize, to the point that we've talked before on the show that Warren Moon has a like support group for black NFL quarterbacks, like, which, wow. You know, you would think, well, these guys are millionaires. Like, why would they need a support group? They could afford all the therapy they need. But like, unless you're a black NFL quarterback, you don't understand how much hatred is out there.
On the receiving end of it.
Yeah, I think, I absolutely think that the whole Kaepernick thing and the NFL players kneeling, it's at least partially got started because people do not want to see a black man play quarterback.
Yeah.
Like and it is also like that's a interesting story, because that's another one where I think white people don't want to believe that they're mad about what they're really mad about. And so, you know, they say it's about the troops. They're not respecting the troops. Or when Trump got elected, it was about, you know, people in rural areas not getting their fair shot. And in fact, another statistic from this Atlantic article, the Nationalist Delusion, talks about how in the aftermath of the financial recession, poor white people's, you know, downward spiral stopped and like started going into recovery. But people of color and, you know, non-white people who are in that economic bracket kept going down.
Right.
So like, but it's seen, I don't know, that just kind of puts the lie to the idea that they are specifically, you know, being targeted by the modern economy in any way. And I mean, this article also talks about a Civil War general who, like, prior to the Civil War was like, you know, specifically talking about white supremacy and why this is a war of white supremacy. But after the Civil War was like, I would never say it was just about states' rights. And it's like, there's
slaves,
this long history.
They were my friends.
There's this long history of cognitive dissonance where, you know, white Americans can make a thing about
another
make a thing not about racism when it's absolutely about racism and they're just not willing to admit it to themselves. So
the one time this phrase works, but let's just call a spade a spade.
Well, I feel like that's how they get their kind of, for lack of a better term, dumber followers on board. Because I feel like there is some followers who kind of, if pressed, was like, yo, you support police brutality? They're like, no. But when you can flip the narrative for those people who would not support police brutality and be like, no, it's about the troops, they're like, yeah, no. Like, right. I feel like there's a level of like washing the guilt away from like, you know, ignoring racism yet again, where it's like, no, we have to fight for these troops, but you're supporting a party that specifically fucks over the troops. Like, you,
right,
everything they do, they take funding from the VA. There's all this military budget that goes towards none of the veterans, you know?
Yeah, and to the companies that make the toys, the weapons, the equipment.
But no one thinks about that. Like, that's where you're, like, I feel like people only care for the troops when they want to negate, black people.
It's a defense.
It's the same thing with All Lives Matter, where, like, there's All Lives Matter, what about all lives? And then, like, a white person is killed by the police, and it's silent. It's
right.
Like, yeah. And then you have Black Lives Matter carrying that torch and being like, all right, here we go. No, this is wrong too. Where's All Lives Matter? And then they still want to try and make the argument of like, because Black Lives, I'm like, what are you talking about? At this point, Black Lives Matter has not supported way more than Black Lives, and you've done nothing. Like, you've supported no one. So you don't get to say anything, but they'll still hop on Twitter talking shit.
Yeah. And I think this is actually becoming specifically whether it's openly acknowledged or not behind the scenes. I think that like we're seeing a tax cut that is going through the House and the Senate right now that is the most openly just like targeted to the very, very wealthy. Like they're taking taxes away from like billionaires, like inheriting money from their parents and putting it on like the middle class and upper middle class people. And I think they know that they can do that now because they know that 30-something% of the population that voted for Trump are just not going anywhere. So it's like, they're like, well, all they care about is that he is acknowledging and, you know, normalizing their viewpoint of, yeah. and like making them feel okay about being like, you know, having these fears and this like rage. So they're not going anywhere. So we can just take care of our donors now. And then we also have this. So they're like kind of, it's like a two-tiered approach that I feel like can't be accidental. That
no.
They just like know now that they can just take care of the very richest people who support them.
Well, I think because some supporters probably mistake their race as being a class.
Right.
And they don't realize that when push comes to shove and all these, it's time to pay the tax man and come in like the next decade, people under who are making under $40,000 are going to get crushed.
Right.
And they're going to have to pay so much because they're taking like away Medicaid funding and things like that. So, you know. And people also need to be very aware that, you know, taxes will touch you at any level, like yeah. unless you're super rich. So
And I feel like this the silver lining in this for me is that I feel like people of color are so used to struggle, like they'll make it, like it'll suck, but they'll make it. But these like poor white people who like just already in their position are feeling like the world's against them are just going to be completely destroyed. Like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there are white people who are just as poor as black people. But yeah, I think there are people who are on the cusp of maybe being like lower middle class or something who will completely fall
off. No, I feel like there are white people who are just as poor as black people, but their perception of their poverty is way different.
Right.
I feel like being poor and black, your world is way different than being poor and white.
Right.
And it's because there's this modicum of hope because everything you're ingesting in media and everything is telling you like, don't worry, you can make it. Your shit's out here for you. Black people have to be told they can do shit.
Right,
Black people had to like wait till Obama came around to believe there were could be president. So black people, when they're poor, they're like, "This is my life. This is what it's going to be."
What it is. Right,
and
right.
even though that's shitty, on the flip side, they're not as kind of wrecked as like as being in that position.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword because it's sort of a resignation into like accepting that. Well, this is just our lot.
Whereas, like, now, as even with when we saw in the during the recession, like, you know, the suicide rates and depression rate in white people went up. Like, the concept of failing when you were told the world is yours wrecks the psyche.
Mm-hmm,
so that's right. that. So that's what I mean when I say that, like, if this were to happen and it goes down, like, you know, black people have that unfortunate idea of like, well, this is life.
Right.
You know, life is struggle. Like it's even in the religion. Like you go to a Baptist church, like one of the kind of themes is like, you know, God loves you because he's testing you by putting you through these trials and tribulations. So that's what I mean when I say shit like that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, you know, I hope you can eat those MAGA hats.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
And we're back. So speaking of... None of that. There's so much news. We wanted to take a step back and just kind of look at the fabric of our sort of existence in the modern media environment. And, you know, Facebook is one of the main ways that we experience reality these days. I mean, that's never been the case for me because, you know, I was running cracked when Facebook became a thing. And so Facebook was always just work for me. It was just like how we distributed our content. But by the end of running cracked, Facebook was the way that we distributed our content. It was just like that. We got more traffic from Facebook than, you know, anywhere else. It was like, that's how people existed. And I've read a profile of the 2016 election that just explains, you know, how negligent Facebook was and just how incredibly powerful the, you know, structure of Facebook being able to like put everybody in their own sort of curated, algorithmically curated, not like hand curated, media bubble just made it possible for, you know, this election to happen. And, for, you know, the country to grow further and further apart until where we are. People have been talking a lot about how to fix this. Like, how do we address this? Because Facebook is, at this point, probably the most powerful entity maybe...
On Earth?
On Earth. Maybe in the history of Earth. I don't know. It's... They determine so much. And, I mean, we had our writer, Sam Raubman, take a kind of deep dive into this. And he brought out some really good points from, other journalists, but he was, you know, saying it's inseparable from our lives. And at this point, it's kind of insane to have the control over something that is basically how people experience their lives, like all around the world, even though a lot of young people and probably a lot of our listeners maybe are like, oh, Facebook's old. And like, we don't pay attention. We don't use Facebook anymore. We use Instagram. Like on a global scale, Facebook is how people experience the world. And it is being controlled by a guy who developed it out of an app to rate how hot girls were his freshman year at Harvard. Like that's
right.
He just, you know, it's he's obviously very bright and knows how to, you know, do programming and shit like that. But like he also is now one of the most powerful people in the history of the world. And, you know, his skill set does not in any way prepare him to do that.
No. Yeah. Cause again, it was like a way to connect, a way to get familiar. And that at first that was like the golden era. I feel like a Facebook was like, wow, I found people from my old elementary school that live across the country now.
Right.
And yeah, over time, like, not even the guy who wanted to just make his creepy app from his dorm room could have realized that we have now really grown, not like dependent on it, in some ways dependent on it, I get, at least to communicate in some ways. But it, again, yeah, it's much bigger than I think even he could have imagined at this point. And now we're in that place where like, what do we do?
Well, yeah, it's getting to the level of, have you guys read that Ready Player One book that's being made into a movie?
I haven't read it, no.
But it's all about how like eventually there will be this thing that's like, it's your Facebook, it's the way you sign up, it's the way you vote. It's the way, it's like everything, and it's an online portal, but it's also VR. And now that Facebook owns like Oculus, it's going to turn into that where it's just like, you fucking put on your Oculus and then you're in Facebook land and you just, like,
right.
You do everything there. You send letters, you do your email, and that's, it's getting to that point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Especially too, cause now like they're even developing stuff for like when disasters happen, like it can immediately like just sort of connect people in those areas. Like, yeah, there's infrastructure there that we do depend on.
Right. And I mean, I think what we've seen at this point from the last year, at least, is that we cannot count on these companies to change on their own. I think that was the idea before, is we were naive as fuck, but we took like Google being like, oh, our philosophy is do no evil. And we were like, cool, Google's
great.
Cool, guys.
Yeah.
We can just like not pay attention. Google's going to be cool from now on. That's just not the case. Like, they are companies who have one legal obligation, and it is to make as much money as possible for their shareholders. That is their only legal obligation. And to make any decision that is contrary to that is actually like illegal. They're not allowed to do that. So all they are doing is trying to create something that is going to draw users in and make users, you know, give their advertisers money, essentially. They're not in it to, you know, help the democratic process. Mark Zuckerberg got so deep into claiming that, like, he had the nation's best interest at heart in the last year that people thought he was going to run for president.
Right.
It was like, yo, that would be a step down for him in terms of power if he, like,
right, yeah.
You know, to step down from Facebook to become president.
Because right now he's world god.
Right.
Have you seen this new tool that Facebook's going to offer where it will allow you to see if you got duped by fake Russian accounts?
No, that's great.
It says, Facebook says it's creating an online tool that will show you if you liked or followed fake Russian accounts spreading disinformation during the 2016 presidential election on Facebook or Instagram.
Do you think many people will use that, though? Because they'll be like, no, I wasn't stupid enough to get duped.
Right, I don't think so. Right. I don't think so. I think it's just ways for, like, Facebook's just trying to be transparent, kind of. But
yeah, but it's like,
the box
had been opened.
Yeah.
Right. And when we talk about the ways that Facebook is affecting people's lives and, you know, perceptions of reality and problems with that, it's actually not like a single thing. You know, like when I hear, you know, problem with Facebook, I immediately go to Russian bots and shit like that. But there's so many different ways that Facebook can be manipulated.
Right.
Like their advertising, I think it was ProPublica, just like bought real estate ads that were
like exclude people of color or based on race or ethnic. Like, yeah, you could, and you can, because all that information is there.
Right. So they said, we don't want this advertisement to reach Jews, people of color, mothers of high school students, which was weird, but right. I guess it's because high school students are going to, you know, be loud or like stay up late.
Right.
Yeah. But so they all of these are legally protected groups. You can't
actually
exclude them when you're, you know, selling real estate. But Facebook was like, oops.
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Didn't realize you could use that for that.
Right. Yeah, essentially.
Or like have ads like use things like, we only want to serve our ads to literally, like, I think that was in that same study or a previous one that said they could find anyone who had Jew hater in their profile and then be like, that's who I want to talk to.
Right.
So it's kind of like, so people kind of have done this forever. Like, let's say you want to run an ad during Empire. It means you're trying to target black people between this age and this age. But if you specifically say it, that's when it's getting weird, I guess.
Well, I mean, I guess in one sense, but I think it's when you do it for these means that are technically illegal or you're spreading a very damaging, like, you know, message by like hate ads that are looking for people who have like an anti-Semitic bias or something like that.
Right. And nobody would ever buy Facebook ads just to target black people. They would buy Facebook ads to target black people who are Arsenal fans and live in the Los Angeles area.
You like, want to get targeted.
That's why Facebook is so incredibly powerful, is you can find the people that you need to find. That they know so much about, you know, your likes and preferences. And that's also why it's so crazy. That's why, you know, nobody realized what was happening during the 2016 election, because it wasn't happening to all of us. It was happening to individuals.
Right.
And everybody was experiencing reality in their own way. So, you know, yes, the media was in their own bubble, but that's because they were existing in a reality, like a hyper reality on the internet, where they had a completely different experience from other people. And I mean, that's not to excuse it, but that is what made it possible.
Well, and yeah, when we were unaware of that too, or just how much the reality can be distorted or differ from person to person.
This is like, you kind of had mentioned this before, where you were like, there's a lot of young people who say like, I don't use Facebook anymore. Facebook's lame or whatever. And to quote someone who's going to offer an opinion of how people don't use Facebook anymore, Chief Keef just posted this Instagram thing that I was trying to find the screenshot, but I remember it. Basically, it was someone trying to act like him on Facebook, messaging someone being like, yo, come through. And his caption was like, if anyone ever tries to come at you like this, know it ain't me. What kind of bum ass nigga I look like using Facebook in 2017? And that's like, that's what a lot of people think about it. So I'm like, in the future, is it really going to have as much power if this whole generation of people are like, we don't fuck with it? But I use Instagram though.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it'll just shift. I mean, we're just there. If it's not Facebook, it's Twitter. If it's not Twitter, it's Snapchat. If it's not Snapchat, it's Instagram. And even, but that's not to say that outside of maybe this small group or subset of people, there are still billions of people who use Facebook and aren't on that, who are just like, yeah, that's how I get my news. That's how I ingest information. Mm-hmm.
If you're just on Facebook and you go to a page that has a Facebook like button on it, mm-hmm. Facebook checks that off. They know that you've been to that page. That goes into their database. They're constantly aware of you.
Yeah, without you even liking
it. Without you doing anything. You don't have to like it. You just have to be on that page.
And it's like the thing of like button. If you just have it running in the background, you go to all these other websites, it tracks that too. So
well, yeah. And then again, because Instagram and Facebook are one and the same, then you also get those crazy ads when you're like, I was just talking about this shit. Yeah. Why am I getting
so
an ad for
my
it?
Friend was just telling me about this, where like, I think it's, I don't know if this is a thing you opt into in Facebook or it's an iTunes thing you opt into, but it's a terms of service thing that you can opt out of, but you have to like try to opt out of it. And basically it has the authorization to be listening to your microphone when you're just talking. And like, you know how everyone says that thing of like, I was just talking about this.
Right.
Like that's real, I guess.
Yeah. And I like, even if you're turning your microphone off, they are creating such a detailed profile of you just in ways that we're not aware of, even if they're not listening, like doing shit that's like bugging you. Like it's just, they have so many data sets. I heard somebody on the radio recently say that credit card companies no longer consider themselves, you know, financial lenders or whatever they used to consider themselves. They consider themselves data miners, because they are just, the way that they're actually making most of their money is by collecting information about your purchase habits and selling that information off.
Who buys that?
Oh,
advertisers.
It's the most valuable thing now.
Like an advertising firm, like several that are here in Los Angeles, will go to MasterCard or something and be like, can I buy this buying history?
Yes.
Debit card history?
Yes.
Or an agency to figure out like, oh, like what's the most common purchase amongst like affluent millennials based on, you know, what their income is because you're their bank and you know what they're spending their money on.
I really want to know like the figures for that. Like how much does Facebook or like Visa charge to sell information? Is it by like, we want to buy black people's information? Like, is it like that? They segment it off like that? I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know, but I know they
make a lot of their money by doing that.
Right. Yeah. I've heard Facebook does for sure.
And that's how Google makes their money as well too. Like, that's what, you get Gmail for free and we sell your info. So that's the trade.
Right.
You know what? I'm not like, you know how people start doing the thing where they put the black tape over their camera and all that? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the mind of like, they have so much on me already that if they wanted to ruin me, they could. So it's like, I don't even care anymore. I'm not trying to keep anything secret. I'm like, hey, if they decide that they want to leak my dick pics or whatever they want to do, it's over. So, like, I'm just going to live open.
I think that's the way a lot of people think these days is, like, you know, if I'm not doing anything so bad, if I'm not a terrorist, then, you know, it's not that dangerous. And that's kind of how I always felt. I felt like, you know, I'm right on that edge between, like, I was born in 80. So, like, I know the, like, paranoid way that people were before, where they were like, you got to protect your privacy.
Right.
And I also know how, like, people who are a little bit younger than me are just like, who gives a shit? Like, fuck my privacy. Like, as long as, if it just, like, gives me ads for shit that I already like, that's great. But the fact that we're living in these mediated little, like, bubbles of existence is, it's just now dawning on me, like, how dangerous that can actually be. That, and the fact that we actually can't see, like, there's this Atlantic article that was like, on Facebook, the campaigns could show ads only to the people they targeted. We couldn't actually see the messages they were reaching people in battleground areas. From the outside, it was a technical impossibility to know what ads were running on Facebook, one that the company had fought to keep intact.
Right. So is the nightmare situation that somehow this information falls into the wrong hands or is used to, like, blackmail people? Like, is that, like,
we're living in the nightmare situation because that information was used by fucking Cambridge Analytica to get Donald Trump elected, I think is, I mean, that's a strong statement, but that's sort of how,
like, did they buy it from somewhere? Like, they got, okay.
And it's, you're basically just getting gaslit. Because they can present you with a reality through social media targeting you, knowing, like, you know, what you're more inclined to believe or what your ideology is, and begin sort of twisting your perception of what the how the world is actually operating.
Wow.
Which you can tell, like, through depending on, like, you know, when you see all, like, with the all the Russia stuff in the election, they were affecting physical space through the internet by, you know, agitating people who have, like, an anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant bias, and then people who have a pro-immigrant, pro-Islam bias or just inclusive bias, and being like, oh, well, there's going to be a rally here. Like, let's get these people fighting. Like, they're already manipulating people.
They're moving by this people way, around in space.
Physical space through the internet, which I think can be, I think that, I mean, I guess the next nightmare scenario is, like, when people are, like, truly, there's, like, a catastrophic loss of life. But, I mean, shit, if you're already being able to stir shit up digitally and affect physical space, I think that is a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't think about the Cambridge Analytica thing. That's such a good point. I saw this article. My friend sent it to me. It's a Vanity Fair article. It's called The End of the Social Era Can't Come Soon Enough. And the basic premise is, it seems increasingly likely that our society will one day view our infatuation with Twitter, Facebook, whatever, like a passing, often destructive fad.
Yeah.
But the problem, I think, with this is that this was written by someone who's old enough to remember a time before we had those things, and they can envision a time without it. But I think for all these kids who grew up with this, their brains are literally wired differently. I think that, like you were saying, even if they stop using Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, there's always going to be that need for a different thing. I don't think anyone can just cold turkey not use social media.
Well, see, I mean, the guy who wrote that, Nick Bilton, he is, like, an expert in Twitter. And I used to actually work with him at Vanity Fair. Like, really super smart guy. But that's true. Like, even for people like me, born in the 80s, I knew I used dial-up phones. I had dial-up internet. I remember the internet was a new thing that we weren't quite sure of. And I also know how to live without it because I experienced life in an era where there was no internet. Mm-hmm. Now, can you say that that can be said for kids who are growing up now who have only known the internet, who have only known social media? Like, what?
I know a lot of young people who have tried to quit Facebook like it's a drug. And
right.
So I do think that there's at least some awareness that it is a vice, which, like, even when, you know, my younger cousins were like, yeah, I had to quit Facebook. Like, that didn't totally scan to me because, like, I hadn't been deeply involved enough to understand, like, why it was problematic. But
yeah, they talk about that a lot in this article. There's a lot of quotes from people who actually, like, worked at Twitter and Facebook who've left, who are now like, I feel guilty.
Yeah.
We were creating this as a drug because the whole thing was that it gives you this dopamine response and it's designed to be like that. And so they're saying they're off it and done with it. But yeah, it'd be very hard for enough people to be self-aware enough to be like, you know what, I have to back out.
No, I think it needs to come from the government because the companies aren't going to change it. The people are like, there's not going to be a big enough mass movement. I think there's going to need to be a movement like the, you know, populist progressive movement in the early 20th century against, you know, the big robber barons. That's how, like, the next generation is probably going to have to treat
the fight social networks. I mean, this comes along with, like, the whole, like, free internet, whatever type shit that's happening right now, where it was like, if you put in any sort of regulations like that, that would almost be like doing what the FCC is trying to do right now.
It's, and like, as somebody who like is kind of on that border, you know, the fact that the FCC like used to be like the big thing that they were known for in my mind before this was flipping out when Janet Jackson's nipple was exposed in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And like, that is so ridiculous that they were worried about people experiencing a nipple. But like, now, like, so they were trying to mediate people's experience, like, away from having to experience, like, seeing somebody's nipple. Like, now they're just letting everything. There's so many different people experiencing so many different things that are completely outside of the control of anyone, really.
Yeah. Right.
So our solution for all of this is, we don't fucking know, man. Somebody who's smarter than me needs to start working on this shit.
Some legislation, maybe.
Yeah, I guess being aware of it has at least seemed helpful for me, being aware that I'm living a completely mediated, algorithmically curated experience.
And in a way, a simulation.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Call back. I should do improv.
Back to Golden Tate. Yeah,
and that's how you do a Herald.
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulge engages your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Lisa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
And we're back. So people are flipping out about the number one movie at the box office, Coco, which is a Pixar movie. So Edgar, you know, hold your tongue.
Oh, I've already been looking at my phone being like, fuck this conversation.
I'm fucking checked out.
You're all mad. You thought Coco was about like a black woman.
Oh, I was like, it was about a black woman with an afro and coconut oil in her
hair. Coco Brown.
But so apparently people are mad because there is a short at the beginning of this Pixar movie that is incredibly long. And we actually have our super producer, Nick Stumpf, who, Nick, you brought your daughters to Coco over the weekend.
I did.
And
wow.
that tone did. Already.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should see his face. He is seething.
He just broke an orange in his hand.
I hear nothing but good things about Coco, the movie, but your daughter walked out, right?
Yeah, I didn't get to see all of Coco because there was an involuntary Frozen movie before the film, which exhausted the precious minutes of my daughter's attention span. And so we didn't get all the way through Coco,
right.
Unfortunately. I liked what I saw of it.
Right. So
he's so mad.
the short film beforehand, because I think there's been quite a few Pixar movies that start out with
most
a short
do,
film.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a tradition.
And they usually are maybe like 2 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, but they've been getting longer and longer as time has progressed.
Right. I think Inside Out had a Moana sort of preview thing.
Oh,
that was,
man,
like,
I hated that one.
Yeah, it was longish.
We
it was
know
like
you
7 or 8 minutes.
Pixar movie.
The so, volcanoes, right? The volcanoes.
Right, the volcanoes. Nick, how long was this one?
It seemed like forever. I think it was 24 minutes, 21 minutes. Sorry, 21 minutes, which is an eternity for something you're not in the mood for.
Right, and for children whose attention span is not very long, you can't get children to sit still for literally anything. So asking them to sit still for one movie and then sit still for a second movie, like after the first one ends. And also, so I have a problem with Olaf, you guys. Don't even get me started on Olaf from Frozen. Because isn't the movie about Olaf from Frozen?
Yeah.
Which
featuring the most irritating character from the most irritating
movie.
That's
such a weird choice.
Right. So Frozen is, you know, a huge movie because Disney accidentally made a movie about two female protagonists. And they were like, oh, shit, this isn't the worst thing in the world. People are super into this. But they thought that it was like a really big mistake to have two female protagonists. And so when the Frozen preview first came out, it was the snowman and the reindeer, like, just, like, fucking around on a frozen pond. Like, just the preview for the actual movie Frozen was essentially, like, a short about Olaf. They were like, man, this snowman character is clearly the best, and kids are going to love him. But it's like the Jar Jar Binks of the Disney universe.
Wow. Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like it was created by the same mind.
Right. But yeah, so just not a great movie.
Not a great movie. And just also, like, you know, fighting against seeing Frozen is something that I've been trying to very hard to do since my kids were born. I was like, I knew it was coming, but I was like, I'm going to fight this because
I'm going to fight this.
You know, and it was eventually they're going to see it and they're going to be talking about Elsa and stuff. And sure enough, that did eventually happen. But I did a pretty good job holding the line. But like when you go to a movie that's not Frozen and then yet there you are watching Frozen,
it's doubly
it's
irritating.
Like so irritating. Yeah, featuring the most annoying and unimaginative character from the movie.
I felt like what's interesting too, because I started picking up on this because a couple of my friends who have young kids were on Twitter saying the same thing. It's like, mm-hmm. Hey, just a heads up.
Yeah.
If you're going to see Coco, just know that you're going to sit through a 20-minute
like laughable fucking thing before you actually get to the movie you wanted to see. Yeah. And like my kid doesn't even is confused now because he thinks we're watching Frozen and not or.
Yeah. Like, my daughter was like, okay, great. I saw my movie. It was like, beginning, middle, and end. Then right. She's like, got up and started tearing around the theater. I was like, okay, well, I guess that's it for us. It's like, oh, right. Bailed.
Yeah, the fact that there's like end credits, like signals to the kid. Okay, movie over.
She got her entertainment. And then
I think y'all got duped by Disney. That's what I think.
No, for real.
No, here's what it is. Coco's a trash movie, but Disney knew it was a trash movie. So they were just like,
Edgar, have you seen Coco?
No. Okay.
But Coco's they were like, at 80 on Metacritic. It's one of the better reviewed movies of the year.
Listen, this is from the same. Critics who love that one movie where they use rabbits and alligators to talk about racism. What was that movie?
Oh, Zootopia?
Yeah.
That was an important film.
Seminal film. They put that Olaf movie in front of Coco because, like, look, we got a bad movie. Let's make a worse movie. And everyone's going to be like, yo, that Coco movie was so great because it wasn't that Olaf movie.
Because it was next to the Olaf movie.
Oh, like whoever's president next after Trump is going to look like fucking God.
Oh, he's going to be GOAT.
On Reddit, a person who works at a movie theater was like, yeah, I had about 70 confused customers who thought they were in the wrong theater since Disney just decided to start their movie with a completely different movie.
But they've always done this, though.
Yeah. It's just I think once it got to like minute 18, they were like, "Yo, this is
like the fourth.
So we're watching a different movie."
Yeah, like
then,
the fourth musical number happens. You're like, "Am I just watching?"
Yeah, there are literally four different songs, and then short.
I like the other thing that in like theaters in Mexico, like there were so many complaints from patrons that they just removed the short altogether because like it was just people were like, "I didn't come for this."
Yeah, it's also irritating because it was like Coco, say what you will about it, Edgar.
Who hasn't seen it?
You know, it's kind of a new thing. They go back and forth between English and Spanish with no subtitles. And like, I was watching it in a bilingual crowd because like there was jokes just fully in Spanish. Like somebody says, no manches at some point.
And then people,
laugh. Yeah, and it was pretty cool. You know, there's a lot of things that I thought were pretty cool about it. But then to have this like mandatory, like frozen experience before, it's just like, can't you? It's like you can't have anything.
Anything, put it at the end or something.
Right. Or just don't. Right. I mean, I don't know.
That's how I feel about that short dude from the Hobbit movies being in Black Panther.
Andy Serkis?
No. The short dude who plays the Hobbit. What's his name? He's also in the British Office.
Oh, Tim from The Office.
Oh, yeah. He's in Black Panther, and I feel like that's our Olaf. Like, we have to sit and watch this nigga in Black Panther when we can't just have that movie ourselves. So I understand your point.
Yeah, I think it is. That's exactly
what I think that you've no, it is. A clear connection.
Yeah,
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman, that dude.
It's like Salient Solution.
He's the Hobbit, right? I'm not crazy. He's the Hobbit.
Yeah.
He's Bilbo, isn't he?
Yeah, he, I think, plays Bilbo.
Who's the Hobbit?
The Hobbit, there's no character named The Hobbit.
Then why is it called The Hobbit?
Because
did you see the fucking movie? You're like, hey man, which one The Hobbit?
Also, he The Hobbit? So none of them is the Lord of the Rings? What's going on?
Hey, I didn't see Jesus. I didn't see Michael Jordan, the true Lord of the Rings. I guess because the other thing is this short was supposed to be like a TV movie.
Right.
That they were just like, fuck it. We'll just throw it into this movie.
They were going to make it a holiday special, and they were like, no, this movie's majesty needs to be captured on the big screen.
Right.
Do you think it was a way
to, like, temper audiences who, like, may have been reluctant to take their children to, like, a so, like, Latin-based culture film that it's like, hey, soften them up with a little snow.
Right, just
snow's sort of, white, our audience is white.
Right, to preempt the angry emails.
Right. They're like, well, you got a little bit of white culture.
That's totally in keeping with what they did with Frozen because, they, like, the one groundbreaking thing about Frozen is that it had two female leads. I think that's what, like, drove its success, but they thought they had to pretend that it was about a fucking magical talking snowman because...
Right,
that's what I thought it was about.
Right.
Wait, is that how it's marketed?
Yeah, the first preview was a reindeer and Olaf like just fucking around on a frozen lake, and it was like a goofy like
buddy
mix
comedy.
Them up. Yeah. So
see,
that's confusing because if that's what they were trying to do, then you'd think that they'd advertise it like come see Coco and also featuring this great
Olaf
Christmas
from Frozen.
Short
right,
from
right.
Frozen.
Right,
but they just sort of blindside you with it.
I'm gonna see Coco because it's interesting. Like Moana got pretty decent acceptance from like Pacific Islander community.
Yeah.
And Coco too seems to have a lot of people excited too.
Oh, they love it.
Yeah. Yeah, who aren't offended. I mean, I think like anything, it's not perfect, But even to your point, like, right, maybe they're doing it to pander to an audience. Even if they're pandering, you're making the product. So I don't know. It's hard sometimes, yeah, like, with to decide if the decision is like a nefarious decision to just exploit like a Spanish speaking audience.
Listen, I'm okay with it once they start pandering to us, but we haven't gotten our Pixar movie yet. So I'm waiting, you know, they got the Pacific Islanders. Got the Hispanic people.
What was the one, though?
It was in a Pixar movie. It was Princess and the Frog.
Oh, but so you want to make that, you want the step to the CG.
I want the Pixar movie.
Right? Yeah, and the hair better look good.
They're already making another Incredibles? Come on.
Well, here, I mean, look, maybe we can, let's work on a script.
Yeah, let's work on a script.
And then there's going to be a vacancy in the creative officer department at Pixar.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there is.
All right, so, like, hey, let's get you in there.
Listen, I already pitched you guys my idea. He has a very good day, and at the end, he gets shot by a cop.
Okay. Well.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.